In the words of John Prine, quote, "We usually write on Tuesdays in Nashville because that's the day they make meatloaf. And I love meatloaf," unquote. If you don't actually know what day it is, because you've lost the will to count or keep track, and weekends mean nothing anymore, because the kids don't care, then you might be in the right place. This is the Take Note Podcast. I'm Ted. I'm here with Adam.
Hey,
we're
Adam.
We're checking in. We're checking in so we don't check out, so we stay in the moment, so we stay present, so we stay conscious. We're taking notes. We're keeping track. If we hear something we like, we jot it down, then we read it back to each other. All right, Adam, what do you got?
All right, Ted, I wrote down on Saturday morning, Logan, that's my oldest son, 8 years old, predicted last night that Charlie, our dog, would get skunked. In fact, he said, Dad, when was the last time Charlie got skunked? And I said, it was in July. And he said, I think she'll get skunked tonight. And 7 hours later, she got skunked. at the time that I wrote it, it was 5 a.m. And, well, she got skunked at 5 a.m. and we were leaving her outside for a while to make the little concoction to get her cleaned off. And the scent was so strong to my wife Jennifer that it made her want to throw up. But I could barely smell it. And I was trying to think about whether that means that she's got the super... her superpower is the sense of smell, or is my superpower the ability to not smell the skunk?
I like that you've taken your son's ability to literally predict a skunking and turned it into a conversation about which superpowers you have. When
yes,
clearly
that's right.
The superpower is sitting right in front of you.
Yeah, he's Skunk Man. I mean, skunk that man. We knew.
That is brilliant. So you and my 3.5-year-old, we were taking a walk through the neighborhood. And there was a neighbor taking a board off the top of his car. Like, you know, a rack, you know, he tied it up, racked it up. And he was pulling it down. And Ewan, being the extrovert of our children, turns to this neighbor and looks up, you know, into the sun and says, "What's that board for?" "Oh, I'm building a shed." "Sex?" Dramatic, confused pause. "A shed." "A shed? You know what a shed is?" "Yes." And we walk away.
It's when a man and a woman love each other.
I think if I had to deconstruct that one, there's we've been listening to the Hamilton podcast quite a bit. And there's a few salty sections of that podcast that the kids have basically heard over and over at this point, having not really any idea what they mean. And one of them is Hercules Mulligan is kind of the lascivious one of the group of Hamilton's compadres. And he spews some saucy rhymes. And then at the end of it, the other one says, "Oh, no more sex. Pour me another brew, son." And so I think Ewan's been hearing that word over and over. And so when he heard something that was anything close to that, that was immediately what popped into his head. It was wonderful.
Did you say that was the Hamilton podcast, or is it the...
soundtrack. If I said podcast, I misspoke.
Okay. You did, but it reminded me that I've been listening to the Doughboys podcast with my kids because I want them to learn more about fast food.
That is, if I had one problem with the Doughboys podcast, it is that it makes me want to eat fast food.
Oh yeah, my wife started listening and is done listening for that reason. And just in case DCFS is listening, I am not listening to the Doughboys podcast with my children. I am listening to it on earphones while they're in the room.
I'm not sure which one is working. I actually don't really ever eat fast food because I don't like it, and the Doughboys podcast is sort of weirdly hypnotizing me into thinking that, hey, maybe you might like this. Maybe you should give Taco Bell another try, even though I actually find Taco Bell to be like disgusting and repulsive. To their credit, though, as podcasters, that even though they're basically pushing disgusting food
really hard, pushing fast food really hard on that show,
I still listen all the time. And I mean, that's a credit to them.
I do too.
What else you got, Adam?
I wrote this down. While meditating at a bench near work, an older woman scootered towards me on her way to Aldi. Her name was written on duct tape on the front of her scooter. "Is your name Winnie?" I said. "What?" she said. "Is your name Winnie? That's my grandma's name." "How did you know?" she asked. She was very concerned that the milk she was about to pick up at the store would spoil on her scooter ride back home. She had a dog on her scooter. I mentioned that I had a dog. She asked me how old my dog was. I asked her how old her dog was. She said 15 or 18. I can't remember. Then she said, "Losing a dog is like losing a child," which I disagreed with her about. She continually sort of worried aloud that the milk was going to spoil and the time it took her to scooter back to her little old folks' home. I knew where that was. I mean, it was in short walking distance from where I was sitting. And I went my way at lunch. I think I went to the Trader Joe's. 50% of Trader Joe's, I think, are located next to Aldi, which is bizarre to me. And on my way back from the Trader Joe's, she was leaving the Aldi with her milk. We ran into each other again. And I had been thinking that maybe she had wanted me to offer to help her with her milk because she kept talking about how it was going to spoil. So I asked her, "Did you want help getting your milk back?" And she looked at me like I was trying to rob her and insisted that she could go quite fast in her scooter. And I apologized and left.
Driving Miss Winnie, an unsuccessful tale of a budding relationship between an old lady and a slightly younger man.
Thanks, slightly younger. And a guy meditating on a
punch. So it was written, her name was written on the cart in duct tape?
There was duct tape on the front of her scooter, and her name was written on the duct tape.
We've been taught to believe that old people are just there waiting for kindly strangers to engage them in conversation, right? I mean, we've been trained by, you know, commercials and documentary films. I think what you've proven is quite the opposite, that all you did was agitate this poor woman, present her with a sense of danger, a sense of urgency.
I didn't know my name was written there, she said. Yeah, that's right. In hindsight, she was talking about her milk spoiling because she's trying to get away from me. I better hurry. My milk's going to spoil. You don't have your milk yet, lady.
Like, milk's going to... Tell me more about this, Winnie. How do you know my name? Quit saying my name.
There's probably a sketch of me at the old folks' home down from the bench. They're all probably avoiding the bench.
Yeah, she on her podcast right now, she's describing how she was just trying to go to the Aldi. Which is always, she can't believe that there's always an Aldi right next to a Trader Joe's. And you wouldn't believe it, but this strange feller with his eyes closed, sitting Indian style on the park bench, suddenly starts screaming her name at him. How does he know
Ted,
my name?
Please, please, Ted. Crisscross applesauce.
You know what? I felt Indians. Bad after I said it. I felt bad. Did I keep going for the sake of my genius level hilarity? Yes, I kept going.
Did I stop you for a cheap, mediocre joke? Yes, I did.
I'm the Roseanne of this podcast. That's what I'm.
Oh!
Yeah. So I took a little note. This is not a story, but a little kind of internet research ping. But I heard somewhere the phrase, "There, but for the grace of God, go I." And I immediately realized when I heard it that this is one of those phrases that I have obviously heard my whole life, but I don't actually understand. Like, if you actually said to me, what is the, you know, how does the grammar of this break down to actually make a point when you say it? And like, how does it position the speaker in relation to other things? I could not have honestly told you the answer. And my other historical version of this is, have your cake and eat it too. And there was a point at which I had to say to myself, I have no idea what that means. I need to actually look this up and figure out what it means. So this is my new version of that.
Okay.
So I wrote that down. And then, you know, I read kind of like the sort of mythological heritage or history of the phrase, which was still dubious. And I honestly, I didn't even write down the figures involved. It was a saint at some point. But the important part was that the saint was watching a line of those who were convicted to hang walk towards the gallows. And that's when he said some variation of "there, but for the grace of God, go me, a reckless sinner in this world." You know, it wasn't even the same phrase. But then I realized, okay, I think I got it. That only this grace, which I'm not a religious person, that part is fairly meaningless to me, but grace, fate, luck, whatever you want to call it, is keeping me from that same fate. That it's just the very fickle winds, you know, could turn a bit, and I'm the one walking towards the gallows. And that whatever it is that separates me from that person is just a thin fiber of a boundary. So I got a really deep sense of satisfaction out of that. And so that's what I put in my book, was kind of that little exploratory process. And now I kind of feel like I really add something to my life in a weird way. I'm not to get too serious all of a sudden, but to really kind of understand a phrase like that and know how the chess pieces of the phrase line up appropriately, so that, you know, now that when I use it, I can actually know what I'm talking about, and when I hear other people use it, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought that was
interesting. When you hear other people use it, you can let them know that they don't know what they're talking about.
I believe you're referring to Saint Duquinius of the, you know. You got anything else?
Ted, I've got this. I decided that I was, for the Memorial Day parade, that I was going to go sketch at the parade.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
and then I realized, dumb to sketch at a parade. You know why? Everybody's moving. Nobody is standing still at a parade. But I did tweet out a few of my favorite, like, Field Notes sketchers. Champagne Rodman, Laura Gwynn, and Tina, who goes on the Instagram name Miata Girl. And I will put those in the show notes. Later, I sketched my dog. First, while she was laying there. Then she started licking herself while I sketched her. So that didn't come out well. And then she sort of fell asleep on the couch. And I got a good staple day sketch of my dog, Charlie. This is post-skunk. And Wiley, my 3-year-old, added some stickers to the sketch.
Awesome. Slight plug, if you want to follow along with Adam's sketch adventures, head over to twitter.com/takenotepod. That's where we live on Twitter. I tag mine with a little dash Ted or a little dash T. Adam tags his posts with a little dash A. What have you learned in your sketching adventures? Because I think it's awesome, and I love that you're pursuing that.
You know, I think I learned that you don't want to try to sketch things that are moving, and also some very complicated geometries, things that are really nice to take photos of, not as nice to sketch.
Hmm.
We've got a vase that's got a very interesting sort of triangular hexa something. So I think it's kind of like half of a hexagon sort of pattern. Pain in the ass. Gave up on that one.
Hmm.
Yep.
I think The street sketching, I mean, it's probably been around for millennia, but there's a blogging community that I came upon them years ago. I think back when I followed the Moleskine blogs that were out there, sort of predecessors to the Field Notes community, I feel like. But they were big fans.
Urban Sketchers?
Urban Sketchers, yeah, that's like the big one. That's still very active.
Yeah, very impressive. Lots of really impressive artists in that.
Totally, totally amazing, and really almost, you know, intimidating for the non-artists among us. So, I mean, I think it's awesome that that you're just doing, and I think the people that you cited and you linked to, they're in the accessible realm of sketching, I feel like.
Yeah, they're all three of them are very, very impressive, but they're a good place to draw some inspiration.
And they're not I glance at them quickly, but they're not drawing intricate architectural renderings of Roman piazzas, which is, you know, kind of what you'll find on the Urban Sketchers site. So I didn't mean to say that they weren't really good, but more that they take a fairly straightforward approach to their subjects rather than being so detailed that you just think to yourself, okay, that person probably works at an architectural firm, and that's so far beyond anything that I could put together that I'll just stick to my notes about going but for the grace of God. Which is all to say, I think it's absolutely awesome. Are you going to be posting your sketches?
I don't know. I've posted a couple of them. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. This is not something totally new for me. So there's the Field Nuts group coined the term staple day when you're in the middle of your notebook and the staple's there. And I try to remember to sketch something in that middle spread. But I did a few more pages. It's a good way to fill up a notebook, too. Feels very satisfying even when the sketches are lousy. But if I sketch more, I will post more on our Twitter.
Do it.
The ones that are not totally horrible.
It does remind me, I bought a brand new Baron Fig Confidant notebook recently, and I was very anxious to, so I'm going to use it for work, so I was trying to get to the end of this really cool but kind of funky paper skull decorated notebook that I talked about previously that my sister gave me. But yep. I definitely, the last 15 pages or so, got out the big fat fountain pen with the medium nib and it's definitely putting down like four word notes per page. I should have just started sketching. I think that's the moral of that story. I didn't want to just close the book and leave five blank pages at the end, because what kind of monster would do that? But nevertheless, I didn't want to sit around, taking detailed microscopic word notes for another week.
Right. I was looking through one of my old notebooks the other day, and one of the first ones that I finished, and at the end of it, I printed out some email exchanges that I think were, it was a friend of mine and I sort of like bouncing words and phrases back and forth and like being creative, and I guess I wanted to save it somewhere, but it was also still just like, yeah, let me print something out and paste it into this notebook so I can use a new notebook. Yeah. Ted, should we move on to our summer beverage series?
Bring it, please.
All right.
Should we recap where we have come in this summer beverage journey?
Recap away.
Well, last week I brought to the table the Carbach Brewing Company Lemon Ginger Rattler, which is delicious and turned out to have a deadly amount of sugar in it. And the week before that, remind me what your selection was.
Topo Chico. The bubbly beverage, the bubbly water with a historical, not a historical, an ahistorical bubbly history. Some mystery legend behind the bubbles.
So what do you got for this week?
I have got the Breckenridge Brewery Vanilla Porter, and as is my custom with these beverage reviews, this one's not as ridiculous as the Topo Chico one, but I will talk about the very little about the beverage. I went out looking for a beer that I wanted to drink, a beer that was good to drink with a little foam with like a head on it, because last week I talked about my wife buying me a number of blue pencils for our anniversary. I had bought her back in February Japanese beer tumblers. It's pottery with instructions, as I like to call it. these beautiful beer cups that I got from Toiro, T-O-I-R-O, in West Hollywood back in February when I was there. You are supposed to rinse them and then put them in the fridge wet because it chills the cup better and it'll chill your beer better, and it will make a large foam on your beer, and so you're a beer that is supposed to, a beer with a creamy foam is what they recommend for. It's good with any foam, with any beer. It makes any beer a little creamier, a little more delightful. So I went out to the store to figure out what I wanted, and I spent some time kind of digging through. I don't like the IPAs, and now it seems like really all you can find are IPAs, or you can find ciders or radlers, but it's hard to find. Like, this was the only porter. This was the only dark beer that wasn't a really hoppy beer that was at the store that I could find. I was at a grocery store, not like a, you know, not like a beer and wine store. But the grocery store where I was picking out the beer was completely overwhelmed, like an apocalypse was overtaking us. There were only two lines open, and there were at least 15 people in each line, probably 20 people in each line. Every single customer, once they finally made it to the checkout, was asking, you know, what the hell was going on. It was so crazy that people weren't even angry. Like, it, you know what I mean? If it had been really busy and slow, people would have been angry. But instead, it was just comical. I took a picture that just didn't even do it justice of just the entire front of the store overtaken with lines of people.
They had the sort of breadline 80s yes. Russia complacence that it was just fact of life.
That's exactly right. But also with like a bemusement. Like, it was so bad that people were like, I'm going to have a story to tell on my stationary podcast. So, you know, the guy in front of me asked the checkout lady what was going on, and the lady in front of him asked the checkout lady what was going on, and I asked the checkout lady what was going on, and she told me that, and she was serious, that it was, first off, that it was worse the night before, which was just amazing to try to imagine, but that she thinks it is the corporate scheduling software that has broken, and so they're not scheduling the right number of employees for, based on how busy it is during the day, which I thought was just delightful. Like, even if that wasn't true, that would have been the absolute best thing to tell everybody. Like, blame the corporation.
That's amazing.
I brought home the Breckenridge Brewery Vanilla Porter. It foamed up quite ridiculously in this extra foamy mug. You could fill up the tumbler about three times with one bottle of beer. It's great. And I wanted something creamy, and I don't know. I feel like I probably could have gone with like an easy drinking summer beer, and the creaminess of the foam would have maybe, now that I'm thinking about it, like added something to what is normally a summer beverage, would have theoretically made my beer a little more creamsicle-y, but yeah, but the vanilla seemed like a nice little touch. And mostly I was looking for something dark that wasn't hoppy.
So how did it work out as a refreshing summer?
Well, experience? You know, I try in our summer beverage series, I try to avoid betraying the fact that I really don't have a palate.
okay. So you can't smell.
It was great.
You can't hear.
Colorblind. Too.
Colorblind.
It was really good. It had hints of vanilla. I don't know what more you want. Yeah. It was good beer, hints of vanilla, creamy head. I recommended a pottery store. I mean, what more do you want from the summer beverage series, Ted?
So let me make one, let me mansplain you one suggestion, which is a cream ale, which is actually sort of bridges that divide that you're talking about, where it's not an IPA, because I like IPAs, but I'm with you. There's a time when you're kind of, you need a break from the hops. But a cream ale is a golden, I don't know, what do you call a kind of beer? I want to say a varietal, but that just is wildly wrong. It's a kind of beer that is golden, and it's not dark and it's not heavy, but it's also easy drinking and has that creaminess that I feel like you're looking for. So I'm going to recommend a variation on your vanilla porter, which is an interesting recommendation for a summer beer because you're going to enjoy it. Right. I'm going to recommend the cream ale. I used to get a cream ale at an Italian pizza joint we used to go to. Every time we go, I get a cream ale. It went really nicely with a big, heavy pizza.
You think like a Boddington? I'm trying. I feel like a...
That might...
I don't even know where this name came from. Boddington might be a good cream ale.
I don't know if that's a cream ale, but that's in the ballpark. I think there's one called Hale's Cream Ale. I think that's what I used to get in the Pacific Northwest. There's a cream ale
here in here. I will go to the beer store. I will buy a cream ale. Yeah. I will also say that, though perhaps I am not doing it justice, this Breckenridge Vanilla Porter was not as portery, probably as I was even looking for, right? I was probably looking for something that would not have made a good summer beverage. But this one did, especially with a ice cold, well, I don't know, weird Japanese pottery.
I mean, that sounds amazing. You could drink anything out of it. A piece of pottery like that, and it would be an enjoyable summer beverage.
Yep.
Well done. All right, I got to come up with one for next week. So to pivot a little bit back to some stationary topics, thank you for the summer beverage recommendation. You know, we don't do a lot of super detailed product discussion, but I did purchase the latest Blackwing, the 54... The Exquisite Corpse Edition, which, if you don't know by now, is a pink paint job with some blue lettering, or turquoise lettering, blue eraser, extra hard, extra firm graphite, and the story behind it, which I quite enjoyed, was that they designed this pencil each stage, you know, each component independent of the others. So they took a cue from the Surrealists and created something new out of sort of little bits of isolation. And I love it. It looks awesome. It's bright, it's colorful, it's fun. I'm not always such a huge fan of the narratives behind the products, like, you know, we picked this person and they did this thing. And I mean, it's fine. It's fun, but it doesn't, it's not the be all end all for me. So there's something about the simplicity of the idea here that I like, that they said, hey, let's take this creative idea and make a pencil out of it. And they, you know, you don't have to kind of delve into some biography of somebody. No, you know, that said, I like a lot of those biographies. I don't want to get too down on that. But this one was just a cool entry, and I was a little concerned that the graphite would be too firm. On the old Yankees edition that they did, I think the 51, if that's what it was, the DiMaggio edition, the graphite was too firm for my taste, even though I kind of like the pencil. But this one was just right. Real sweet spot. So, I mean, I'm also not a big let me rank the editions person, but this one is up there with my favorites. Really enjoy it.
Ted, do you buy that this each part was created independently and then they just put it out into the world?
I mean, I don't know. I what do I care?
Fair enough. It just I kind of think you could just put that pencil. So I don't believe it. I guess that's just very hard to believe.
I think that's the subtext here. You're putting the question on me,
right? But yeah, I'll just say this: it's very hard to believe. It would be ridiculous for me to say that anyone, you know, that to say that they made it up. But I do find it very hard to believe. And I guess I just feel like, well, I want that pencil. I went looking for that pencil. They didn't have the pencil. The next day you mentioned you had it. And I said, send me half of yours. And you said, sure. Thank you.
And by 2019, I'm going to get you that pencil.
Absolutely. No rush. I think it looks great. But there's just something that... The whole Exquisite Corpse thing is such a interesting idea and a cool way to do it. And I don't know, I guess maybe they put out some new video that I haven't seen, so maybe I'm completely wrong, but I think they've also got the Exquisite Corpse technique wrong, right? Because it's... but it's the Exquisite Corpse is like you write a sentence or two sentences and then the next writer sees... Yeah. Only the last sentence and you write the next one, right? It's building off.
I know what you mean.
But in addition to just being wrong, I do find it like a ridiculous idea of how you would create a product. I hope it's true. It doesn't really matter. It's a nice looking pencil.
Well, I think that
it's like, that, I stick on it every
but
time.
But that's kind of what I like about it, is that it's, they're like, hey, we did this funny way of coming up with a crazy color. And I mean, you could break it down and say, I don't think they did this or whatever. But like at the end of the day, the story is, oh, we picked some crazy colors and it looks right. Cool. So, I mean, I guess you could buy it, you could not buy it. But I mean, would you ever buy anything that Salvador Dali told you? I mean, anything that, guy told you about anything would be a lie wrapped in a joke, wrapped in a poem, wrapped in another lie. But that's the whole charm of it. So I would.
Except this is a marketing wrapped in a lie, which maybe, I guess you could argue, is maybe Dali was doing the same thing. I don't know. But, you feel yourself being marketed to. So you back up a little.
It's all just marketing, man. It's just marketing. Look at this podcast. We're just marketing ourselves. Stop being so cynical. Okay. It's a fun pencil. Well, hey, let's do this again next week.
Sounds good, Ted.
Hi, Eliza. Looking forward to your next podcast episode. Adam, have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.